extreme radio for extreme times. This is A View from Space with the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640.
I'm the Spaceman. This is A View from Space. And let me just point out one more time, living up to its moniker that it's had for years, this is the only radio station, the only radio show on planet Earth that no one knows what time it starts. I want to welcome you in if you're driving around town right now listening to AM 640, or if you're at work listening by the AM 640 app, picking up the show that way, I welcome you in too. Or maybe you're listening to me on Shaw Direct right now on channel 865. That's the way you pick up the show. If you are, I welcome you in also. Or if you're listening to me on your 3 or 4G personal communication device via the Stream the World software, the fastest growing way to pick up the show, by the way, I welcome you in. Or maybe you're what some call the best seat in the house, sitting in front of your Mac, your PC at home, logged on to 640toronto.com, picking up the live audio streaming there. Wherever you are in the world, I welcome you in. If you're a new listener to AVFS on AM 640, and the show is fast growing, the New World Order that's talked about incessantly is the forming of a global empire which will consist of one government, one monetary system, one religion, led by the purest of the bloodline from the antiquity, from ancient times past, that we can trace all the way back to the family of Cain. And the all-seeing eye is their logo, showing complete knowledge, complete control, complete dominance. In other words, God. Man is about to declare he's God. The idea that we're being indoctrinated into, brainwashed into, is that we are evolving into a more peaceful and open-minded society where we are all one. I must also mention the laws which are forming this legal entity that's just around the corner won't be made by the people, the citizens of the world, you and I. They're being made by the ones who are pursuing, pushing for this one world government to happen. So things will only get worse. This has been a leap year. A leap year in witchcraft is the year every 4 years where a huge burst of energy is put forth for that fifth year to be implemented into the new goals, the new level that's pushed by this great quantum leap, as they call it in the leap year. That's what a leap year is actually for. That's why there's an American election on every leap year. Because they are have been the economic engine of the world and the policemen of the world since the end of the Second World War. So, it's America that's to be targeted. An economic crisis is coming, so large, hasn't been seen since, going back to the days of Abraham Lincoln, when the Rockefellers and the Rothschilds duked it out. The first time it happened was with Abraham Lincoln, who wanted to break away from the monarchy of Britain and have a republic. The Rothschilds, the banking cabal of Europe, offered him an exorbitant interest gaining loan. And you know, of course, what the story was. Abraham Lincoln turned down that loan, and they said, well, how are you going to finance your way through to the Republic? He said, I will print my own money. Beware those that have the power to print money. It's been going on now since the crash of 08. To the tune of $40 billion over 8 years every month, printed and put out onto the streets. Another central bank, that was the Fed in the U.S., another central bank, Tokyo, Japan, zero to negative interest rates, trying to push the prices of commodities up, inflation. But deflation is the problem, because there is not enough money. Oh, they're printing tons of it, just like Japan is doing it, America's been doing it, and the European Central Bank also printing money. But for the first time now, on the cusp of this American election, do we see those three very important central banks, Europe, Japan, and America, the Federal Reserve, doing the same thing? It has been in the past, when America is printing money, then the European Central Bank doesn't. Japan doesn't. But now all three are flooding the world with cash that is making, well, a false stock market look, a false hope for growth. But what it's doing is basically just making the currency weaker and weaker and weaker and weaker until it will become worthless, because that is the goal of the elites with this new world order, with this one central bank. Right now there are 196 countries, 193 central banks. We're going to reduce that down to one. The cash crunch is coming. Could it be with the king of debt, America? Getting back to Abraham Lincoln with the Rothschilds offering the extravagant loan with the incredible interest rate to get them on the hook, to put them in debt, to buy them. Abraham Lincoln turns his back and he makes his own money, calling it greenbacks because it was green in color. It was legal tender, made so by the Union. That was the North. There was another currency in America also, the Confederate currency in the South. And of course, if you know the truth, the American Civil War was not about freeing slaves. It was about freeing themselves from the debt of European bankers. This fight is back on again. I believe that Hillary Clinton, as I said last week on this show, is a bastard child of Nelson Rockefeller, same bloodline. And I believe that Donald Trump has been picked by the Rothschilds overseas to be the opponent for the Rockefeller and the Rothschilds to go at it one more time over America's debt. It's coming. The New World Order will be controlled by the few, an advantage, and will lord over the masses. The rich will become richer, and the ones in debt will have even more debt. This is Spaceman on Talk Radio, AM 640. This is AVFS, and I'm just getting started. I'm the guy to call the Spaceman. This is Talk Radio, AM 640, and it's View from Space. I communicate with you only one way, except for this microphone, and that is through email. I have two locations, two addresses. One, spaceman@640toronto.com. The other, space@640toronto.com. And I thank you for the one that you've sent. I really appreciate it. Tonight, everybody was trying to guess what the start time would be so far. So, as I said at the outset, Abraham Lincoln had a run-in with Rothschilds. They were going to put that country, America. The New World was starting to waken and be an economic force. Abraham Lincoln wanted to break it away and keep it for the people, the Republican people of this republic called the United States of America. A union in the North, slavery in the South. Then the Rothschilds said, we can get them on the hook, we'll just give them the loan, they can fight their war, and we'll have them on the hook. No, it didn't work. Abraham Lincoln said, I'm going to print my own money and call them greenbacks because, well, that's everybody's nickname for them because they were green in color. Then, we all know what happened to Abraham Lincoln after Ray crossed up the Rothschilds. See ya. An assassination. Well, that fight is back. Because we've already been told a million times over through the Afghani war, the Iraqi war, and now the Syrian war, that there's this special relationship that Britain has with America. I know what that special relationship is. 44 of their presidents are, and there have been 44 presidents related to the monarchies, the highest royal houses of Europe. That's how they keep in power. That's how they stay in power. They are groomed to take these jobs. So the Rothschild fight and the Rockefeller fight is coming up. Can you imagine a woman running the Federal Reserve, Janet Yellen, in a meeting with Donald Trump as a president? Can you imagine what kind of an earful the Federal Reserve would get in that meeting and what he wants them to do if he is put into office, which I believe is going to be the case? If not, it doesn't really matter who goes in. Because, you see, the goal is going to be the same. The Illuminati don't get into a fight unless they control both sides. That's how you control the outcome. They already know what the outcome is going to be. They already know, as I understand, where the economy of the world is going. The global economy is going to take a huge hit. Brexit is a huge part of it. I believe that quantum leap, that huge push of energy that comes out in this leap year to manifest that new level that we get into in the fifth year, which is 2017, with a new president. There will even be more problems with borders and doing business across borders. So the economies of the countries are going to suffer greatly, along with the price of oil the way it is now. It is never coming back. So you can see quite clearly what's in store for the next 4 years or so. The New World Order is going to be controlled by the few. The rich, as I said, are going to become richer, and the ones that are in debt are going to even be more into debt. Not created by the people, for the people. The formation of a one-world government would also bring about martial law, like a police state, Big Brother, because there would be no nation to fight against but your own. So you can obviously see why the New World Order would have everybody's personal information on every single citizen at their fingertips. The new technology the Illuminati possess makes that capability a reality now. So, the New World Order is actually already here. It's the federal governments and international entities which create statutes and acts as their law and have us engaged in control to follow those laws. Those organizations have become legal entities which rule their legal, not lawful, world. See, it's quite easy to be legal. You just pass a law that says it's legal or illegal, and everyone has to obey it. But it doesn't necessarily mean it's lawful, meaning just. There are a lot of laws that are put in place that are legal, but aren't just. We're living in a dualistic jurisdiction society, where there is common law, legality, and both of these laws are in play at the moment. Whose authority or law are we subservient to? Are we actually born free beings at the very beginning, reside under the common law, also known as nature's law? Our freedom is to live as freely as we want and to not commit damage to personal property or commit fraud. Treat others as you'd like to be treated, but just 10 minutes after your birth, in the real world here, on this third dimension, your parents are given contract forms for a social security number and birth certificate. We are essentially now bounded to these contracts. So in contract, we are to follow the legality, meaning the acts and the statutes of those contracts, because it's unlawful and illegal to breach such a contract. We become full-time employees of the elite rich. This is the NWO, the New World Order, the false doctrine which is seen as public, as a public benefit, but is essentially a private nightmare. If we take a step back and look at the situation we're in, all the institutions are actually all private. But since 99% of the people have contract with them, they're seen as public. But the private company pushes for ever more power and ever more control over our money system. That's what I was talking about at the very beginning of the show with the Rothschilds and the Rockefellers, two combatants pitted against one another for America and her economic wherewithal. Yes. They all have, 99% of people have contracts with these private companies, work for them, but they're seen as public. But the private company pushes for, as I say, more and more power all the time. And this monster is only going to grow and grow until it fulfills its plan of a global entity, one government controlling the whole planet. In the past few years on AVFS, on talk radio AM 640, I've been pointing out the process of a hidden globalization agenda taking place throughout history. But it's been, well, let's just say in the last 15 years, that the crack in the door has now gone. It's kicked wide open now. After 9/11, the Illuminati told us they had to secure our freedom. So now we have a global war on terror, and many freedoms were taken away for security so that they can be our nanny. Since a war on terror can never be won, because a terrorist can be anyone, and one that is ever a renewing enemy, One that will never die. It's the same thing with the war on drugs. The war that they waged on the drug dealers. The terrorists. It'll never end. And we're supposedly fighting in the Middle East to kill terrorists and bring them democracy. It's also brought to the spotlight exaggerated fear from other suspect countries like Iran that would launch World War III if any conflict ever started. So basically, what 9/11 has done was to take us to war and put us on the brink of a world war globally and expand New World Order control. I think that about covers it, doesn't it? It's a Spaceman Talk Radio, AM 640. There's more, and it's next. I'm the guy to call space. It's a view from space. It's all it is on Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. And thank you so much for the one that you've sent. Yeah, a lot of things have been happening in the last, say, 10, 12 years, even less, in the last 7 or 8. 9/11. Not only did it not put you in that global war on terror mentality and change a lot of your privacy laws, but brought a crash to the world economy too, which we never really were allowed to fully recover from. That coupled with that other devastating blow when the stock market in 08 dropped 777 points and brought the signing of that $700 billion bailout, which loaded even more debt onto the American taxpayer. Now, we've had a massive takeover by the Rockefeller banking concern in North America, the Federal Reserve, a private corporation, buying up, taking over businesses like AIG, Freddie Mac, and Fannie Mae, plus whatever they buy with that $700 billion that they laid out, all of that paper in the stock market just artificially driving the stock market sky high so that people think around the world that America's doing well. It's not. The economy is in a bad way. They're in trillions and trillions dollar debt. No, it was a mass hijacking of the monetary system back in 2008 with a swipe of a pen surrounded by tragedy and people seeking relief. And not one word has slipped into the Illuminati-controlled mass media, that was a big nationalism of the system in America. The American government was now actually nationalizing. That's not capitalism. That's socialism. The big businesses. That's what Barack Obama's presidency was. America becoming a more socialist country. And not capitalist, because soon it's going to join partnership to become one of the areas in the world known as the North American Union, like the European Union. It will be China having their area. 10 of them all, when all is said and done, the North American area of the 10 regions will be Mexico, Canada, and the United States. Canada, very socialistic. And you can see how it's just the rich against the poor in Mexico. And America must move away from the capitalism more toward the socialism style of governance, which it is. That's what Barack Obama's presidency was all about. Now, let me just mention that AIG, an insurance company branch, You realize insurance companies are equivalent to intelligence departments, don't you? They know everything about you and I. And AIG, before it went down, was the second in revenue in 2007, just behind State Farm. The Illuminati are in possession of all that information on who has the money, how much they have, the state of that person's health, and so much more. Bailouts. That's how they did you. Too big to fail, if you'll recall. Now they're playing up, even on the ABC television network, with this new series that's running about the president that wasn't even elected. A bomb went off and killed all of the powerful people in America. And they already set one person aside in case that scenario actually happens and they become the president. They're showing you in that sitcom, because that's basically what it is. It's brainwashing sitcom, only there's not comedy in this one. It's about reality, that your country, America, is getting more socialistic. And not only that, but you can have a leader where they're not even elected. So that you can be taken over totally and completely. And the whole idea behind this ABC show is to show you that you need government. Without government, you will die. Your whole well-being depends upon the government, which is not true at all. But that is the illusion. Same thing back with the bailout in 2008. You know what the definition of a bailout is? One is to parachute, of course, from an airplane. But the second one in the dictionary of a bailout is to abandon a harmful or difficult situation. Also to leave, to depart from it. Notice bailout does not mention to fix a problem. It means to leave, to depart, to run away from. That ran away from the responsibility of paying off the debt. They got taxpayer money that they printed, which was already borrowed money from the European banks, the Rothschild cabal. So you see, this is where the fight is right now. America's had federal bailouts since the 30s. As a matter of fact, the 1930s, the Great Depression, was the very first major bailout of America. 1984 was the Continental Illinois bailout. 2008, Bear Stearns. 2008, Fannie Mae, Freddie Mac bailout. 2008 again, American International Group, AIG bailout. The car companies were bailed out. They're moving fast, building up the debt so hugely, so gargantuan will be the debt that it, of course, will never, ever be able to be paid back. That's when the system collapses. We're fast heading toward that. The talking head experts, the analysts, nightly scratching their heads, unable to fathom or grasp the idea of what's going on around the world right now. They seem to be blind to the debt. They think everyone should be in debt but having growth in their economy. Yet there's people like you and I who see very clearly what's going on and have a really good sense of what it is that's coming around the bend. It's the collapse of the system. Scare tactics or not, the Illuminati love to use fear. It's the best controller. The general sense of unease is being projected for a purpose. So my goal right now would be to reach that one person who is listening to me right now and let that person know what we all will be facing in the not-too-distant future. When you're educated and aware of those things that exist, fear has a much less hold on you. It's Spaceman of Talk Radio, AM 640. More next, right after this break. I'm the guy to call Space. It's View from Space. Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails, please, to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. And I thank you so much for the one that you've sent. Thank you. So, you remember Katrina? Katrina was a controlled superstorm that was chemtrailed to life to the kind of level of destruction that it had. It can be done with hitting the center of the eye of a hurricane with a laser beam. Being done now. Well, FEMA, the Federal Emergency Management Agency, way back then had been empowered since those final touches on a plan were put into effect that would see martial law declared, in fact, in the United States with various scenarios anticipated as triggers. Now, the triggers include a continuing economic collapse with massive social unrest. Bank closures will follow, of course, resulting in violence against financial institutions or other false flag attacks. And also, the Army Corps of Engineers sources report that the assignment of the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team to team up with FEMA and the federal law enforcement in the imposition of traffic controls, crowd control, curfews, when any national emergencies arise. There were remnants of exactly what I'm talking about right now happened this week, where in Charlotte, North Carolina, where the riots were happening, with a black man killed by the police there in Charlotte, North Carolina, in the United States. And martial law was declared in Charlotte. The military were brought in. They weren't from that local area. They were, in fact, the ones that were brought in when they declared martial law earlier in another city. Remember Ferguson? And they had to bring in the army there. Those are the same people that were brought into Charlotte, North Carolina. Probably the 3rd Infantry Division's 1st Brigade Combat Team. See, each of these events that look like just things that happen to crop up and violence occurs are actually planned and are actually being used to push ahead, to further along this idea of revolution in America. As I opened the show with it, with the revolution of the Civil War. Now, for more than 200 years in America, federal laws have protected the American people against the use of military force on their own soil, against their own people. Strengthened even in 1878 by the Posse Comitatus Act, those laws have guaranteed that the federal government in the United States could not use the military for domestic law enforcement purposes. But in 2006, the American Congress weakened the Posse Comitatus Act by expanding the list of activities for which military involvement on domestic soil could be permitted. Hurricane Katrina in 05 was the reason, the excuse, this was changed. A highly classified document, too, known as CNR. All of the senior members of the U.S. Congress know about it. They're senior staff members. And it's a warning of a bleak future for the United States if it doesn't quickly get its financial house in order. The document is being called the CNR document because it reportedly states that if the United States defaults on loans, debt, underwritings from China, Japan, and other nations that bought America's debt, all of which are propping up the United States government financially, and the United States unilaterally cancels those debts, America can expect a war that will have disastrous results for the United States and the world. Conflict is the C word in that document, the CNR document. The other scenario is that the federal government in America will be forced to drastically raise taxes in order to pay off debts to foreign countries to the point that the American people will react with a popular revolution against the government. Revolution is the document's R word, the CNR document. Does this global financial instability have a connection to the global war on terrorism? Of course it does. How does it all connect? You can retrace the beginnings of the Crusades in ancient times to November of 1095 when Pope Urban II gathered the Council of Clermont. 300 members of the clergy convened under his chairmanship. The pacifist doctrines that had dominated Christianity were abandoned, laying the foundations for the conquest. At the close of the council, Pope Urban II announced this state of affairs in his famous speech to a congregation that was made up of all social classes, demanding that Christians stop the infighting and warring among themselves. The Pope called on them, whether rich or poor, aristocrat or peasant, to unite under one banner and to free the Holy Land from the Muslims. To him, this became a holy war. Historians describe Urban II as a good orator. He intended to incite the Christians against Muslim Turks and Arabs, succeeded by alleging that the Muslims were assaulting pilgrims and that Christianity's sacred places were being desecrated. Pope Urban II went on to proclaim, as an encouragement, that for those who participated in that crusade, all sins would be forgiven, and a bargain there. The excited crowd was given cloth crosses to stitch on their clothes, and then they were dispatched in all directions to spread the word of the holy war, simply because they didn't have a tool called the media in those days to get the word out like they do today. The overwhelming response to this call made history. In a very short period of time, a massive crusader's army was assembled, made up of not only professional warriors, but also tens of thousands of ordinary people. The French knights wanted more land. Italian merchants hoped to expand trade to the Middle Eastern ports once it was all, well, finalized. Large numbers of people, poor people, joined the expedition simply to escape the hardships of their normal lives. Now, in the summer of 1096, this mob of self-appointed crusaders set off in three separate groups, each taking a different route to Constantinople, where they met up with one another. The Byzantine or Roman Emperor Alexius I at that time added 4,000 mounted knights and 25,000 infantry troops to this force to raid the Holy Land, rid the Muslims.
Raymond IV of Saint-Gilles, Count of Toulouse. Bohemond, Duke of Taranto. Godfrey de Bouillon, the Merovingian bloodline member from Brazil who was the mastermind behind the Crusades with the Vatican's money. Hugh Count Vermandois, Robert, and Duke of Normandy, commanded this army. Bishop Adhemar of Le Puy, the close friend of Pope Urban II, was their spiritual leader. And off they went. The Crusaders reached Jerusalem in 1099. And after a big battle, in just a few weeks, the city fell. Guess what? We're still there today. We're still living this dream out. The Merovingian bloodline is not completed yet. More next. Talk Radio, AM 640, I'm Space. I'm the guy to call Space. It's Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thank you for the one you've sent. Now, as I said before the break, the Crusades started back in 1095 in the month of November. And today, 2016, it's still happening. The West, in the Middle East, fighting is what's, well, right now it's Syria. That's the focal point. And when you play around with Syria, you're playing around with the most serious part of the Arab world that's connected very, very closely with Iran, the Persians, and the Russians. And that is your enemy in the very near future, if you're from the West. So the battle was hard fought. Within weeks, Jerusalem fell as the Christians murdered, slaughtered so many. In The Monks of War, researcher Desmond Seward actually even told the story of those tragic days in that book. Jerusalem was stormed in July of 1099. The attack was one of the most savage ever in history. The entire population of Jerusalem was put to the sword. Jews as well as Muslims, 70,000 men, women, and children perish in this bloodbath, which raged for 3 days. In places, men waded in blood up to their ankles, and horsemen were splashed by that blood as they rode by them through the streets. The First Crusade ended with the fall of Jerusalem in 1099. The Crusaders established a Latin kingdom that stretched from Palestine all the way to Antioch and made Jerusalem its capital city. The Crusaders began struggling to establish themselves in the Middle East. But to sustain the state they had founded, they needed to organize themselves. To achieve this, they established an unprecedented military order. Members of these orders had emigrated from Europe and, in Palestine, lived a monastic style of sorts. Now, in the same time, they also traveled for war, or trained for war, rather, against the Muslims. One of those orders went down a different route, undergoing a change that would significantly alter the course of history in Europe and eventually even the world. It's today's modern-day bankers. They were the original military order known as the Knights Templar. After about 20 years after the conquest of Jerusalem and the creation of a Latin empire, the first attack, conquest of Jerusalem, the Templars first appeared on the scene of history, otherwise known as Templars or Knights Templar. The order's full and proper name was Pauperes Camillae Eternae Christi Templique Salomonis, or Poor Fellow Soldiers of Christ and the Temple of Solomon. A major part of the information that we have today on the Templars was recorded by the 12th century historian Guillaume of Tyre. The order was founded in 1118 by nine knights. Yes, Satan's favorite number. Hugues de Payen, Geoffrey Saint-Omer, Rossal, Gondamer, Geoffrey Bissol, Payen de Montdidier, Archambault de Saint-Agnan, André de Montbard, and Hugh Comte de Chatang. So, one of the most talked about secret orders, one of the most effective and powerful organizations of medieval Europe, the Knights Templar, quietly born. These nine knights presented themselves to Baldwin II, the Emperor of Jerusalem, asking him to assign them the responsibility of protecting the lives and property of the many Christian pilgrims, now flocking to Jerusalem because it was freed from Muslims all over the continent of Europe. And the emperor knew Hugues de Payen, the first Grand Master of the Order of the Templars, well enough to grant the nine their request. So accordingly, the district where Solomon's Temple once stood, and by then included the site of the Al-Aqsa Mosque, by the way, which survives to this very day, was given to the Order of the Templars, Christian, from which they also got their name. The Temple Mount was the Order's headquarters for the next, say, 70 years, until the Battle of Hattin. The great Islamic commander Saladin reconquers Jerusalem and gains it back from the Christians and claims it for the Muslims once again. See, this is an ongoing story, isn't it? The Templars established themselves there by choice because the site of the temple represented the earthly power of the prophet Solomon, and the remnants of the temple contained big secrets. Protecting the Holy Land and the Christian pilgrims was the official reason why these newfound world bankers, these nine founders, gave for joining and forcing for creating the order in the first place. But the true reason behind it, to give birth to these nine founders, to this secret organization known as the Knights Templar, was altogether different. At the time, there were many other orders of warrior monks in Jerusalem, but all acting according to their charters. Besides training as soldiers, the Knights of St. John, for instance, a large organization also known as the Knights Hospitallers, took care of the sick and the poor and were performing other good deeds in the Holy Land. The Templars, though, took it upon themselves to protect the lands between Haifa and Jerusalem, a physically impossible task for nine knights to do, but even then, back then, it was just becoming obvious that they had a political agenda, as well as making a lot of money. Because, you see, the original Knights Templar would say to you, if you were in Europe and heading for the Holy Land for the pilgrimage because it was freed from the Muslims again, well, you could give them all of your money, sort of like the world's first bank. You give them your money. When you get to Jerusalem, they'll give it to you back. Well, slightly a little less, because they'll take their cut. The idea was to keep your money safe with them so that you wouldn't be robbed on your way on your trip to Jerusalem. So a lot of people gave the Knights Templar their money. This became the banking cabal that grew and grew, and look what we have today. The central banks of the world, from this very idea of the Knights Templar. In Morals and Dogma, one of the Freemasons' most popular books, Grand Master Albert Pike reveals the Templar's true purpose. publicly, the object of the Templars was to protect the Christians who came to visit the holy places, hold their money for them, but the big secret object was the rebuilding of the Temple of Solomon on the model prophesied by Ezekiel. This still has not been completed, and believe me, today's bankers who are the long, long line of Knights Templar that stretch into today, 2016. These Knights Templar were from the very beginning secretly devoted to being the enemy to the crown of Rome and the crown of its chiefs. The object of the Templar was to first acquire influence, then wealth, than to fight and establish the Gnostic and Kabbalistic religious belief system on the world. In short, the worship of Lucifer from the books of Solomon. This very Luciferian indoctrination I speak about all the time on AVFS and Talk Radio AM 640. This is the same secret order that was showcased in the Da Vinci Code movie and blockbuster best-selling book. Space back with more in a minute, right after this. I'm the guy to call Space. It's a View from Space on Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to space at 640toronto.com or spaceman at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you've sent and keep them coming. Thank you so much for them. So, the authors of the Hiram Key are not the only researchers finding evidence for these kinds of things where the founding Templars really had no evidence that was produced that ever showed them protecting pilgrims. But on the other hand, they were soon to find that there is conclusive proof that they did conduct extensive excavations under the ruins of Herod's temple, as Solomon's temple was called after Herod rebuilt it. That temple is going to be rebuilt for the third time, only this time it's going to house the Antichrist that's coming for this new world order as leader. The authors of the Hiram Key are not the only researchers, I say, to find evidence for this. For instance, the French historian, Gaetan Delaforge, said the real task of the Nine Knights was to carry out research in that area in order to obtain certain relics and manuscripts. Aha. Information, which contained the essence of the secret Kabbalistic doctrine and how to employ it, and probably all the names of all of the demons that Solomon knew how to conjure up, and what were the rituals, indeed, that would actually have these demons, these spirits, appear. In the Hiram Key, Knight and Lomas conclude that the Templars excavated items of such an astounding importance at the site that they adopted a wholly new world view. And many other researchers come to the same conclusions. The order's founders and their successors were all of Christian upbringing, all right, but their philosophy of life was not a Christian one at all. The Kabbalah literally means oral tradition. This is what they were about. The practice of black magic rituals and rites. And securing that. That's what they were looking for, and that's what they found. And today's world is being run by this practicing of the Kabbalah. Kabbalah literally means oral tradition, an esoteric brand of mystical Judaism. The Kabbalah is also a school that researches the secret hidden meanings of the Torah, or the first five books of Moses, and other Jewish writings, but there's a lot more to it. A close look at the Kabbalah reveals that it actually precedes the Torah. It was a pagan teaching. It continued to exist after the revelation of the Torah and lived on to be spread amongst the followers of Judaism also. Today it's the power behind and controlling the political world in 2016. The Hollywood actors, all kinds of artists in architecture, in paintings. For thousands of years, the Kabbalah has been a resource for sorcery and practitioners of black magic, and now has a strong network of incredibly powerful and influential people all around the world practicing it. The Templars, just like the strong network of incredibly powerful and influential people all around the world, studied the Kabbalah for one reason, with the goal of acquiring supernatural powers, with the goal of acquiring the information to be able to set up a one-world government to enslave the world's population and to keep them under subservience and in fear. Oh, yes. It's still happening today. Why I'm talking about it tonight. You know, the Knights Templars were the forerunners of Freemasonry and all of their affiliated organizations, which is what the Cabal in London today uses to control all of their people that they've set up around the world. Now, as I explained to you, in the ancient Templars' past, you can easily see today's bankers, world leaders, the direction the world is being pushed in. It's exactly the same. Right down to the codes of keeping the secrets, the Khan of command, the obedience of their members. It's the same thing with the Illuminati. Warren Buffett, Bill Gates, Warren Zuckerberg of Facebook, Elon Musk, Angelina Jolie, Sergey Brin, Larry Page, the Google boys. I could go on and on and on, but you get the idea. All of their money is not, I repeat, not theirs. It belongs to the organization. That's why the money flows to people like I've just named, because they are members who realize it's not their money, and they are using it as a tool to forward the great work, this continual march toward a one-world government. Also, when these people are out and about, they don't pay for things either. It's all taken care of by the corporation. The original Templars were not allowed any personal possessions, by the way. Everything remained the property of their order. They also had their own unique dress code, too. Over the armor, they wore a long white mantle emblazoned with their insignia, the Red Cross, so that they were recognized as Templars wherever they went. The Red Cross symbol was assigned to the order of Pope Eugene III, who incidentally had been tutored by St. Bernard. There were three classes of Templars: knights, warriors, different ranks, men of religion, and finally servants. Other rules specific to the order prohibited marriage, correspondence with relatives, or a private life. Meals were eaten together en masse. And as portrayed on their seal, which depicts two knights on one single horse, they were required to go about the business in pairs, share everything, eat from the same bowl. They addressed each other as my brother. Each Templar had the right to three horses and one servant. Breach or respect of any of these rules, very, very harshly punished. Now, according to researchers Alan Butler, Steve Defoe, the Templars were expert financiers, just like the bankers are today with their algorithms, with their electronic trading. Using trading techniques in those ancient times, quite unknown to the Europe of their day, is what they're doing today. like usury fees, for instance. Because the Knights Templar were the ones who invented it. They were the first to use a usury fee when lending money. Interest rates. Get where I'm coming from? More next on Talk Radio, AM 640. It's the Spaceman. Back with more in a minute. I'm going to call Space. It's a view from space. This is Talk Radio, AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks so much for the one that you've sent me. I really appreciate it. I really do. They start rolling in before the show even begins. And tonight, a lot of people were guessing what time the show would actually appear on the radio. As you know, that's is the only radio show on planet Earth that no one knows what time it really starts. So I was talking before the break about the Templars, expert financiers, also into the Kabbalah, into black magic, while wearing a Christian facade. There's more about them, too, that they passed on to the day, today's modern-day bankers. The Templars were not only expert financiers like the ones we have in charge today in our banking system, but they used trading techniques quite unknown in the European area of that day, just like today. And usury fees, first ever usury fee used by the Knights Templar. It's, of course, how the banking industry makes money. Lending money with an interest rate on borrowing money. It was born, that idea, with the Templars. Even though usury or interest on loans was strictly forbidden, they weren't afraid to lend money on interest. The Templars acquired such wealth by doing this and power that they came to a point, to a place that no one dared speak out against them any longer. In other words, they got too big to fail. No one could do anything about it any longer. This went to their heads, and they went out of control. They were disobedient to kings, to the Pope in some cases, even challenged their authority. In 1303, the Knights Templar, for example, a few years before their order was supposedly wiped out, refused a request for assistance from the French King Philip IV, as well as his later request in 1306 for the Templars' order to merge with the Hospitallers. The other group of people that helped the poor and the sick and the needy. Travel was a very hazardous enterprise, you see, in the 12th century. En route to your destination in the Middle East, you'd be continuously robbed by bandits everywhere and at any time, carrying money, family heirlooms. Because whenever anyone traveled in the Middle East in those times, all of the possessions went on their little donkeys. Everything they owned. They took everything with them. This is where the Templars made a fortune out of this situation by establishing a fairly simple system of banking. For example, if a person wanted to go, say, from London to Paris, first he would go to the Templars' office in London, hand over all of his money. In return, he was given a paper with an encoded message written on it. On his arrival in Paris, he would hand that note to the exchanger for the money that he'd paid in London, and he would get his money back, of course, minus the fee of interest. Along with traders, also wealthy pilgrims used this system. The world's first checks were issued by the Knights Templar in Europe. It could be cashed on arrival in Palestine, minus a hefty interest charge for the service, of course. In the book called The Temple of the Lodge, co-authors Michael Bergin, Richard Lee explained the Templars' economic system, the beginnings of modern-day banking as we know it today, actually traces back to them, and that no other organization contributed as much as the Templars to the rise of capitalism. History records, Florentine bankers have invented checking accounts, yet the Templars were using that method of money transfer long before they were. Most who research the subject say that capitalism first came about in the Jewish community of Amsterdam. But long before them, the Templars had already established their own medieval capitalism, including banking based on interest rates, usury fees. They lent money on interest rates up to sometimes 60% and controlled a major proportion of capital flow and liquidity in the economy of all of Europe. Today, they're after the world. This has not stopped. It's been incessant since those days in 1099. After Pope Innocent II was elected Pope with St. Bernard's backing, he granted the Templars the right to build and run their own churches. This is a first in the church, in the church's history, which ruled as an absolute power at the time. This privilege meant that from now on, the Templars were answerable only to the Pope and beyond the reach of other authorities, including kings and lesser rulers. It also reduced their responsibilities to the papacy, letting them hold court, impose their own taxes, collect them, so they could pursue their goal of a one-world government free of any pressure from the church. In the process of planning their churches, they developed their own style of architecture, later to be known as Gothic. In the Sign and the Seal, Graham Hancock actually stated that the Gothic architecture was born in 1134 with the construction of the North Tower of Chartres Cathedral. The person behind this work of architecture was St. Bernard, the Templars' mentor and spiritual leader. He felt it important that the construction symbolize in stone the Kabbalistic approach and the esotericism that the Templars esteemed so highly. So as Graham Hancock once wrote, St. Bernard, the patron of the Templars, played a formative role in the evolution and dissemination of the Gothic architectural formula in its early days. He was at the height of his powers in 1134 when the soaring North Tower of Chartres Cathedral was built, and he constantly stressed the principles of sacred geometry that had been put into the construction of that tower and throughout the whole building, which now has spread throughout the whole world. Yes, sacred geometry. The numbers are put into all of these great buildings that are around the world, built by the Illuminati. They have three guides: astrology, numerology, and sacred geometry. The numbers. The precious numbers. All for bankers. It's all there is. Through the mastery of that, numbers, you can rule the world. And they are intent on doing exactly that. Yes, the Knights Templar were the ones. They were the ones that began this system of usury fees, putting countries in debt because they'd put kings in debt. They had the Vatican in debt. And the people that they associated with. Graham Hancock commented that he thought the Templars' architectural skills were supernaturally advanced and had been particularly impressed by the soaring roofs and arches that they built. The word Gothic, by the way, comes from the name Gotha. The real name of the family that resides in Buckingham Palace today is not Windsor at all, but in fact, Saxe-Coburg-Gotha. After the death of the Latin king Baldwin I in 1186, Guy Wisigna, who was known to be close to the Templars, succeeded to the throne in Palestine. Reynald de Chatillon, prince of Antioch, became the new king's closest aide. After fighting in the Second Crusade, Reynald stayed behind in Palestine, where he became good friends with the Templars. Now, Reynald's cruelty was very well known in the Middle East and the Holy Land. July 4th, 1187, the Crusader armies fight their bloodiest battle. It's at Hattin. It was 20,000 strong, along with 1,000 mounted knights. Assembling this army, stretching the resources of towns along the border to the limit, leaving the others unprotected and vulnerable. The battle ended with a virtual annihilation of the Crusaders. Most lost their lives, and every survivor was captured. Among the prisoners of war, King Guy himself and the leading commanders of the Christian army. This is Spaceman Talk Radio, AMX640, giving you a little history of where our banking system came from and who they really are. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. CG rates, just wondering about your statement regarding the Templars as the first practicers of usury interest. Weren't the first usurers the ones driven from the steps of the temple by Jesus? Sign, CG. Those were the money changers. They would change your currency over from the currency of your country to Jerusalem. And the money was used there. So they weren't actually lending money for interest rates on the steps of the church. They were changing money and making money with the currency exchange. Which is exactly what they do today, yes. And in the currency exchanges, in the FX exchange, right? Yes, nothing has changed. It's simply history repeating itself. And there's more to come with the Knights Templar, too. Or today's bankers, as you would follow it up the chain as we gained time into the future. So after Saladin's victory at Hattin, what a battle it was. He advanced with his army and freed Jerusalem. Even though the Templars had serious losses, the Templars survived their defeat in Palestine and along with other Christians and withdrew to Europe. Most of them headed for France, where, thanks to their privileged status, they continued to increase their power and wealth. So in time, the Knights Templar became the state within the state in many European countries. Acre, the Crusaders' last stronghold in Palestine, was captured by the Muslim army in 1291. With this, the original justification for the Templars' existence, the protection of pilgrims in the Holy Land, disappeared as well. Now the Templars could concentrate all of their efforts on Europe, but needed a little time to adapt to the new situation. So during this transitional period, they relied on the help of their friends in the royal houses of Europe. The best known one was Richard the Lionheart. He had a very tight relationship with the Knights Templar and was looked on as an honorary Knight Templar himself. The reason was Richard the Lionheart was from the bloodline of the Knights Templar, having vowed to protect the Merovingian blood. What's more, King Richard sold the island of Cyprus to the Templars, which was to become the temporary base of the order while they strengthened their position in Europe to counteract their losses in Palestine. So in order to understand the links between Cyprus and the order today, you need to understand that the events that led up to the Third Crusade. By July 1187, Jerusalem was conquered. Guy de Lusignan was taken prisoner the same day to be freed a year later, after swearing an oath never to attack the Muslims again. Germany, France, England, made the joint decision to launch the Third Crusade in order to retake Jerusalem after that. But before proceeding the attack on Jerusalem, they considered it essential for their success to first capture a harbor where they could land troops and supplies. Acre was selected. So King Philip of France and England's King Richard's navies both set sail for Acre. Now, after King Richard's naval forces take Cyprus, Templar master Robert de Sable enters the scene with a proposal to purchase Cyprus from Richard the Lionhearted. The price was fixed at 100,000 bezants, then gold currency of Byzantine. And Templar master, Robert de Sable, made a down payment of 40,000 of them. This gold, available so soon after the death of after the defeat at Hattin, was enough to give you an idea of the Templars' financial strength. In 1291, Acre fell to the Muslim army. As the Christian presence in Palestine came to an end, the Templars then moved on. Some settled Cyprus, later to serve as their temporary base, by the way, in the Mediterranean. The Templars actually wanted to acquire a kingdom, like the Teutonic Knights won for themselves in Northern Europe, except they wanted theirs in the center of Europe, preferably in France. Now, by my own calculations, because we're involved in another crusade already in the Middle East. It started after 9/11. By my own calculations, there have been 21 crusades in all. 9 of them are numbered. So all depending on how you look at this, how you read this, the next crusade now getting underway will either be number 10, the number of law, or the 22nd crusade, a double 11. In Europe, under the guidance of their master based in France, the rest of the Templars carried on their usual activities with unequaled degree of freedom. The Grand Master enjoyed the same status as kings. The Templars owned land in most country in Christendom. From Denmark to Italy, a massive warrior army also formed the base of their political power because all the ruling houses of Europe were indebted to these Templars. They were afraid that their future was threatened. The throne of England, seriously indebted to the Knights Templar. King John, as a matter of fact, emptied his coffers of the treasury between 1260 and 1266 in order to finance his military operations, and Henry III likewise borrowed heavily from the Knights Templar. I tell you, they've been using this formula, usury fees and lending money, to take over small principalities, then huge countries, and continents, and now they're poised to grab the world. The Templars' offices in Paris house their own treasury, as well as the states and the treasurer on the order, also the treasurer of the King of France. So, as you can see, the royal house's finances were under the control of Templars and totally dependent upon them. That's what it is today. The corporations, the governments of the world, are totally dependent upon the bankers. After the Christian presence in the Holy Land ended June 6th, in 1291, the Templars went back to Europe. Even though their original purpose of protecting European pilgrims ceased to exist, they kept on strengthening their power base, increasing their number of soldiers and amassing even greater fortunes. But from that day forward, events began to turn against the Templars. While their numbers and their wealth were on the rise, their greed, their arrogance, their tyranny increased as well. By then, the Knights Templar were distinctly different from the Catholic Church's teachings, beliefs, and practices. Europeans no longer had anything good to say about them. In France, people said, like, you drink like a Templar if somebody was falling down drunk. And in Germany, they go Tempelhaus, meaning whorehouse. And if anyone acted in any abhorrent or arrogant way, he was said to be as proud as a Templar. That's what we say about bankers today and politicians, isn't it? It's history repeating itself again, because the same old tried and true tricks of control are being used over and over and over again, and no one seems to notice. That's why I talk about what's happened, past history, because it's where we're going. Modest missionaries fighting for Christianity. This was now the Templars, how the Templars presented themselves to the ordinary people. Modest missionaries. They were perceived to be saints of great virtue, mentors of Christianity, devoted to aiding the poor and the needy. Sounds like all the politicians and all the great rich people that give to charities today. Doesn't it? It's the same thing. It's the Spaceman on Talk Radio AM 640. There's more, and it's next. I'm a Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. Emails to spaceman at 640toronto.com or space at 640toronto.com. Thanks for the one you've sent. I appreciate it. I really do. Just want to pass along some information. You can use those addresses, or you just want to give a critique of the show, or just like to say where in the world you're listening to AVFS from on Talk Radio AM 640. Feel free. So during the time in the Middle East, the Templars had links to mystic sects belonging to different religions and denominations, including sorcerers. I'm talking demonic worship. They were known to have close ties to the Hashashis, the assassins, who, while influential, were seen as a perverted sect by the Muslim population. From them, the Templars learned some pretty interesting controlling mystic teachings and barbaric strategies, as well as how to organize a sect. The order's highest echelons brought in the mystic teachings of the Kabbalah, the influence of the Bogomils, Luciferian teachings of the Kabbalah also, abandoning Christianity. And according to the Templars, Jesus was a god ruling in another world with little or no power in this world. Satan was the lord of this material world of ours. Now, the rumors were confirmed. It was proven that the candidates for the order of the Knights Templar were required to deny God, Christ, and the saints. They committed sacrilegious acts like spitting, urinating on the cross, being kissed square on the mouth with the osculum infame, or the kiss of shame on the navel and the buttocks by more senior Knights Templars during the initiation ceremony. That they freely practiced sexual perversions, the Grand Master wielded totally authority over everything. That they practiced rituals of sorcery, used Kabbalistic symbolism, was clear evidence that the order had become blasphemous to Christianity. In other words, they were actually worshiping another deity. And it gradually emerged that they were revering the idol Baphomet, a demonic head of a goat whose image was later to become the symbol of the Church of Satan. This is the banking cabal and the Illuminati today. And of course, there was the final end result of the Knights Templars. They say that they were wiped out after their Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, was burned at the stake in 1314. And other areas around Europe, Italy, Germany, follow suit by arresting and interrogating the Templars that they had in their country that they were living there. But for different reasons, some countries offered the Templars refuge. And they went, of course, to Scotland, England. England's Edward II, in fact, wrote the Pope and said that he would not persecute the Templars and that in his country they would remain safe. But a couple of years later, after interrogating the Templars, the Pope issues a papal bull declaring that the Templars' unspeakable wickedness and abominable crimes of notorious heresy had now come to the knowledge of almost everyone. And supposedly, after reading it, King Edward agreed to prosecute the Templars. But it never happened. Now, getting rid of the Order of the Templars is a lot harder than you would think. Even though the Grand Master, Jacques de Molay, and many of his brothers had been eliminated, the Order survived. Not only did the Knights of the Templar survive the Inquisition by going underground, but they kept on being active, especially in England and in Northern Europe, and today are the power behind the banking cabal industry. In the years following the loss of the Holy Land, the Templars kept on with their goal to create a state of their own. And we're now left in no doubt that the Templars needed, indeed, to manage, against all odds, to carve out their own nation. It wasn't some chunk of land in the New World or a hidden kingdom tucked away in darkest Africa. In fact, the Templars remained absolutely central to everything that was happening in Europe. And what's more, they were instrumental in the formation of the Western world as we know it today. The Templar state was, of course, and is, Switzerland. I often refer to it on this show as the home of the Illuminati. In order to carry out their activities in safety, Templars escaping persecution and arrest in France and some other countries of Europe needed to regroup somewhere. They chose the Confederation of Cantons, provinces, now known as Switzerland. The Templars' influence in Switzerland's formation and traditional makeup can still easily be recognized today. Alan Butner, a Mason and co-author of The Warriors and the Bankers, is an expert on the subject of Templars. In a discussion forum held not long ago, he said that there are a few important reasons why it is that the Knights Templar went to Switzerland after their, well, supposed liquidation. They found that the founding of the country of Switzerland coincided exactly to the period when the Templars were being persecuted in France. Switzerland is also just east of France and would have been particularly easy for fleeing Templar brothers from the whole region of France to get to. Now, in the history of the first Swiss cantons, there are also tales of white-coated knights mysteriously appearing and helping the locals to gain their independence against foreign denominations. The Templars were big in banking, farming, engineering, and these trades played a large role in the gradual evolution of the separate states that would eventually become Switzerland. The famous Templar cross, by the way, is the flag of Switzerland. A lot of Templars found refuge in Scotland, too. Before I move on from Switzerland, you must understand how much influence the Knights Templar had on the Catholic religion. You know, the guards of the Pope, the personal guards, the ones that had that old-style, well, armor on, the bloomer pants, holding the axe upright. They're the personal guard of the Pope of Vatican. Doesn't matter who the Pope is. Same guards guard him. They are the Swiss guards. And in order to join that group and guard the Pope in the Vatican, in Italy, you have to be a Swiss-born citizen. That's still the connection that the Knights Templar connected with the Catholic Church. Now, some Templars escaped Spain also, as well as Scotland, in the 14th century. That, of course, didn't recognize the authority of the Catholic Church. And it was Robert the Bruce, if you know your history. They soon found out the perfect camouflage to hide their existence in the British Isles, fighting for Robert the Bruce. Yes, the Templars seem to have disappeared from history. But in 1804, when Bernard Raymond Faber, Paleprat, became Grand Master, truly interesting is an accidental discovery he made in 1814 on one of the bookstalls along the River Seine, Paris. He came upon a handwritten Bible of the Huana translation of the Greek language. The Bible's last two chapters were missing, and their place were notes divided by and containing numerous triangles. Examining these notes a bit closer, he realized that this was a document listing the Grand Masters of the Templars, the Knights of the Templars, beginning with the fifth Grand Master, Bertrand de Blanchefort, through to the 22nd, Jacques de Molay, the 23rd, Lermenius of Jerusalem, and then on to Grand Master Claudio Matteo Radix de Chevillon. This document suggested that Jacques de Molay passed the title of Grand Master onto Lemenius of Jerusalem, and I tell you now that the Templars never ceased to exist. They live on today in the lodges of Freemasonry, and their descendants are causing the financial chaos seen in the headlines in the Illuminati-controlled mass media of today. Now, many sources suggest that the death of Jacques de Molay, survivors of the order, planned a conspiracy. Supposedly, the Templars sought to bring down not only the papacy, the Roman Catholic Church, but the kingdoms that had declared them illegal and executed the Grand Master. This secret mission was handed down through generations of members and preserved, maintained by later organizations like the Illuminati, the Freemasons. Everybody knows now that Freemasonry plays a huge, major role in the downfall of the French monarchy, the French Revolution. And when Louis XVI was guillotined in a public square in Paris, one of the members of the crowd shouted, "Jacques de Molay, you have been avenged. So it's not really difficult to discover Satan's schemes. The satanic plans are openly published. And the King James Version of the Bible, of course, has a lot to say about them. Although Lucifer would seek to present himself to mankind as a benevolent being, he's far from it. He truly comes only to kill, steal, and destroy. You know, one of the great seats of Masonry today is Macon, Georgia. Macon is a French word meaning Mason. The city was founded by Freemasons, Macon, Georgia, and it was laid out upon the city plan of Babylon. The city's filled with the occult symbols of Freemasonry in Macon, Georgia, including a whole bunch of obelisks, the Shaft of Baal. And Georgia is a state that has more than its share of satanic influence. More when I return on Talk Radio AM 640. It's the Spaceman. I'm the Spaceman. It's Talk Radio AM 640. This is A View from Space. Final segment in tonight's show. I brought up Macon, Georgia for a reason. Macon, French word meaning Mason, city founded by Freemasons. Laid out just as the city planned for ancient Babylon. Georgia is a state that has more than its share of satanic influence, too. Macon lies at the geographic center of the state, and this location was chosen purposely to demonstrate the influence of Masonry over Georgia and America. Georgia's largest city is Atlanta. This is, of course, named after the city continent of Atlantis, a fabled continent that has deep connections with the Illuminati. There's a major occult landmark in Georgia called the Georgia Guidestones. I've spoken about this a few times on AVFS, Talk Radio AM 640. Some call it the American Stonehenge. The monument's constructed 37 years ago. Relatively unknown to most people, it's located in a rural area about 90 miles east of Atlanta. Like most of Luciferian works, the establishment of this landmark was done in the dark, in secrecy. The origin of this strange monument, called the Georgia Guidestones, is shrouded in mystery because no one knows the true identity of the man or men who commissioned its construction. All that's known for certain is that in June 79, a well-dressed, articulate stranger visits the office of the Elberton Granite Finishing Company and announces he wants to build an edifice to transmit a message to mankind. He identifies himself as R.C. Christian, but it soon becomes apparent that that wasn't his real name. He said he represented a group of men who wanted to offer direction to humanity. To this day, no one knows who R.C. Christian really was, or the names of those he represented. Now, in the public library in Elberton, there's a book written by the man who calls himself R.C. Christian. It was discovered that the monument he commissioned had been erected in recognition of Thomas Paine and his occult philosophy. Thomas Paine, you see, was described as a great patriot in America, the author of Common Sense and the American Crisis. And these pamphlets were printed and widely distributed, leading a lot of people to support the rebellion against England. What many don't know about Thomas Paine is that he was vehemently opposed to Christianity. He also wrote a book called The Age of Reason. Thomas Paine is actually quoted as once saying, "All the tales of miracles with which the Old and New Testament are filled are fit only for imposters to preach and fools to believe." At the top of the Georgia Guidestones are these words: "Let these guidestones to an age of reason." This expression occurs on each of the four sides of the capstone, written in Babylonian cuneiform, written also in Sanskrit, written also in Greek, and in Egyptian hieroglyphs. All of the ancient civilizations that once used these guidestones, or these actual facts that this man's printed on these guidestones, as the principles, the 10 guiding principles, or 10 commandments, if you like, of the New World Order. Some have referred to these as the 10 commandments of the New Age movement, and I would describe them as the 10 commandments of the New World Order. They go: maintain humanity under 500 million. We're at 6 billion. So you can see a lot of people have to go. Guide reproduction wisely, improving fitness and diversity. Well, they're guiding reproduction, all right. No one is having children any longer. Birth control, abortion, rampant. Improve fitness and diversity. You can see with all of the Fitbit watches and all of the runs for cancer, and runs for this and runs for that. They're trying to beat you into a good state of fitness, because you can't send a lot of obese, fat people into war. Unite humanity with a living new language. That's this new language they're speaking about in the Georgia Guidestone Guide. Is this science / black magic? That's the new language. Another one of the Guidestones is rule, passion, faith, tradition, and all things with tempered reason. In other words, quell your thirst for God. We'll give you who's God. Temper your faith. Another one of the guides. Protect people and nations with fair laws and just courts. That's self-explanatory. Let all nations rule internally, resolving external disputes in a world court. Now that's where we move into the world of no more sovereignty. There's a world court now. So all nations are subservient to the world court. It centralizes justice. Here's another one of the guidestones in Georgia. Avoid petty laws and useless officials. Self-explanatory. Balance personal rights with social duties. This is a good one. This one brings into play personal freedoms. Balance personal rights with social duties. It's your duty to turn in anyone who speaks against the authority. That's what it'll amount to. So balance your personal right. You don't really have a right to protect that person if they spoke against the state. You must denounce them. You must call them out. And you must tell on them. Here's another one of the Georgia Guidestone guides. Prize truth, beauty, love, seeking harmony with the infinite. That's not seeking harmony with God, seeking harmony with the infinite. Which is, what is that? Well, the infinite is not infinite when you're dealing with Lucifer, who has your end in mind. And the tenth one of the Georgia Guidestones, be not a cancer on the earth. Leave room for nature. Repeat it again. Leave room for nature. In other words, man must be subservient to his earth. These commandments can be broken down into four categories: the establishment of a world government, population and reproduction control, the environment, man's relationship to nature, and spirituality. These are the four areas that the promoters of a new world order are also focused on. And it's why they're in the Georgia Guidestones. And a clever study of the plans of the world global elite, as published in their own writings, will reveal their goals they have set for themselves. And that means that they will use every possible black magic spell to forcibly or to willingly get people to go along with these goals so that they can be accomplished. It's really not difficult to identify those responsible for this monument located in Georgia, Macon, Georgia. The man who paid for it to be constructed identified himself as R.C. Christian, a pseudonym. And it's easy to discern that this is a reference to Roman Catholic, the R.C., Christianity. This may seem opposite to the references to Thomas Paine, who was vehemently opposed to the Roman Catholic Church, but a study of Freemasonry and Catholicism reveal that they are both taken from the ancient Babylonian mystery religions. And Lucifer is the author of both. They're closing in. The quantum leap year is over almost. And we're headed into that fifth year when the new level of accentuation is put into high gear. This has been A View from Space on Talk Radio, AM 640. Coast to Coast is next. I'm Space, and I'm out.